So we are now joined by two additional colleagues and friends. So Urban Sjöström, pleasure to have you on stage. Hi. Urban is the Director of the Department for Conflict and Humanitarian Affairs at the MFA. It actually says deputy here. I just promoted you. Literally down the street.
Yeah.
Okay. You have substantial experience of peacebuilding. Both working on the issue of peacebuilding generally and development cooperation generally for a long time, but having done so also in context of fragility, both at or through CEDA and also, but I know from the CSO sector, so civil society organizations. You've done so with a lot of experience from one of the case countries, so Somalia and this, but the region of Somaliland, where you, I think, really cut your teeth on the issue of peace processes and issues of inclusive peace and sustaining peace in one of the most perhaps difficult examples we have. Thank you so much for being here. Chris Coulter is from the Folkebert Academy. See if I can get your title right. You're heading the program for conflict prevention. You're now the director of... You also have very substantial experience from peace building. You have worked and provided strategic advice on peace, security, and development through the MFA. You've been linked, very much involved, actually, in central aspect of the peace process in Colombia. And I have also a PhD in anthropology, looking at women's role in the civil war in Sierra Leone. So welcome up on stage as well. So, if you forgive these church introductions, we jump straight into it. And I would like first Urban and then Chris to provide brief, and I emphasize brief, sort of comments or reflections on what we've heard today, but also bringing in your own experience from peace building in the different countries and contexts where you have that experience. Both of you are very much, and clearly so, the target group, at least part of the target group for a report like this, and also the work of ODI, of course. So Urban at the MFA, involved in and engaged in policy and strategic direction towards peace building from the point of view of Sweden and Sweden with partners. And Chris, you work at a public agency who is charged with a direct mandate to actually implement and carry out many of the things that we have been discussing here. And I'm sure that both of you, from different aspects or in your current positions, but also in the past, have faced many of the dilemmas that we have been going through and have thoughts to share. So after Urban and Chris, I'll throw out a few questions to get the discussion going and then invite all of you as well to join us in that discussion. And please make sure that we also have a discussion with ourselves and between the panel and panelists as well. So Urban, please.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot. Pleasure being here and really... pleasure taking part of the report and this discussion. Indeed important, and we do it too seldom. I need to start in Somalia, since I've been working there for a number of years. 1999, Somaliland and local peace building in practice, you could say. A UN project called War-Torn Societies Project worked with local leaders with issues that they locally selected to create a dialogue and a process where local actors could come together for local solutions. That was indeed part of Somaliland, a process of establishing itself. But it also happened in Puntland, a region next to Somaliland, which didn't seek for a nation state, but rather a region in a coming federal Somalia. But very much local peace building, I would say, on local terms. What we call in our jargon track three, the local processes. Then in 2013, I was there again with a very different process. In 2012, a new president had been elected. He was different from the others. He was not the normal, if I may say, warlord. He was coming from a more NGO sector, education sector, and so on. Sweden and others saw an opportunity to work more closely. There was indeed a process of peace building and state building through a framework called New Deal, where politics, security and development is put in one framework to work together. Indeed, then track one perspective on the top level between states and then the new government, but also peace building and state building from that perspective. My humble view would be that this track one process would not have been possible without the track three that had been going on for decades. But as you said, it was not a linear process. It happened somehow. People were involved, and suddenly the opportunity arose in Somalia. I was amazed by the New Deal structure. A structure sounds very boring, but bringing security, politics, and development together, federal government representative with local administration actors, civil society, and donors together in one room to take decisions. That's a bit of track two, to be meet in the middle. So what I want to say is that, yes, we worked with local peace building, but it's necessary to work on all levels, what we call track six. If you combine all, then you have a comprehensive, somehow, peace building process. Going then to the report, I would say that very much what you say I agree to. I need to say from the outset that on Somaliland and the indication that Somaliland has been isolated from financial support, I would strongly disagree. Though it is an exception, I need to say. But on that part, we have, I would say, as Sweden, quite some different view. It's a difference between diplomatic political discussions and financial aid. And there, Somaliland has not been treated differently than other parts in Somalia. To conclude, I think I would welcome the report very much. It would have been interesting if it would have been looked more into the linkages between political action, diplomatic, development, and security. Development is not in isolation. There are many actors involved. It's also important for all of us to remember the limitation of development aid and international engagement all in all. International support is there to support local processes, which are influenced by so many complex actors. And so we need to remember the limitation for development cooperation and international support. It would have also been useful to look into other contexts where we have more feature of the new challenges, such as radicals, new actors, which are a different actor when it comes to peace building. In Somalia, we have the Al-Shabaab. That is really a challenge for us. But when it comes to flexibility, adaptation, calculated risk taking, we do a thing. We do agree. One final comment and then a question. You say that it's more or less policy as usual. I would also there disagree a bit, because if we look globally, we have moved from the Millennium Development Goal to Sustainable Development Goals. For the first time, we have a goal by the global community on peace, and not only peace, but peace processes. We have twin resolutions, both in the General Assembly and in the Security Council, on sustaining peace, saying that peace is much more than peacekeeping. So there is policy. On the Swedish side, we have a new policy framework, also including peaceful and inclusive societies. There is a conflict perspective now, which CEDA is supposed to take care of. So things are happening. But the challenge is policy to practice, indeed. And there I have my question. You say that we should rethink some fundamentals. Which ones? Tell me.
Thank you. I think Joachim Hanna would like to jump on that. But before, if I may, Chris, and then we can have a discussion in the panel.
Sure, thank you. Thank you so much, Rickard, and the authors of the report, and also Aoife for coming all this way. First, I actually want to thank Eva, and I do this all the time when I meet them, because you have one of the most challenging jobs, and that is really to translate between researchers and policy people. And you said that Urban and I, in a way, were sort of the recipients of this report, because it is a tough job. Researchers work in the longue durée. They have sort of a longer perspective. We work fast, and sometimes we don't talk the same language. And I know this, because I once... Despite what you think now, I used to be a radical researcher in my youth. One of the things you said, Joachim, reminded me of something that happened to me in Sierra Leone when I was doing my dissertation fieldwork. I was sitting down in a village having dinner, and I was served some served food. And I asked what it was, and they said, oh, this is the reconciliation goat. And I was like, reconciliation goat? Well, you know, the donors, they ask us, what do you need for to do local traditional reconciliation? And we said, we discussed it and said, well, let's say a goat. So they got lots of goats. Why I mention this is because, as you said, the local. Oh, we need to do something local. So I did some research, and it turned out that some of those aid workers had worked in northern Uganda. And this was obviously West Africa, Sierra Leone. And in northern Uganda, some traditional reconciliation rituals had worked for traditional reconciliation. So those people said, let's try them in Sierra Leone as well. It was a good dinner. I don't know if it actually reconciled anyone, except my stomach with me, maybe. So first of all, let me thank you for the report. And as Urban took almost all of my speaking points, but I'll refer some of them. So because I think also it is timely, and I'm sure you didn't know this when you started to do this research, because I know you've been doing it for a while. But it is timely because not only, as Urban said, we have the SDGs, and in particular Goal 16 on peaceful and inclusive societies, but also, as you mentioned, the twin resolutions on sustaining peace. And why I also think those are important, not only, as Urban said, that it goes from peacemaking, it's actually going from peace building to sustaining peace. Of course, now we use it as a buzzword, sustaining peace, and nobody really knows what it means, but it sounds good. But it is, the theories and methodologies that you use in your report, and that you, the four cases that you've studied, you sort of the transformative issues, and you point to Jean-Paul Lederach and his colleagues. And I would say that today, actually, based on my former MFA experience and also being at FBA today, that's, I mean, we are there now, in a sense, at least, you know, policy and thinking-wise. Transformative peace-building and systems analysis have reached a lot of traction in the past years. There are obstacles, and you point to them, and as Urban, I agree. And I think most of them are sort of administrative, bureaucratic nature. And we did talk before coming up here about some of them. And in terms of politics, things can move fast. But in terms of bureaucracy, things move slower. And we said that, oh, this government wants CEDA to do this and this and that. But, you know, it's a development agency. It's like an Atlantic cruise ship, you know. It takes a bit longer. And in a way, that's good, isn't it? I mean, isn't that the beauty of bureaucracy in a way? What if it didn't work? What if it worked as fast as politics? What would happen in the U.S.? I'm just saying. You also mentioned New Deal in the report, and Urban knows a lot about this, having worked in Somalia. I would have wanted to see maybe a bit more on that, because, of course, yes, you're right. When we, from our Swedish perspective, meet with the local or emphasize national ownership, we often stop at the state level of national ownership. But sometimes that's also for good reason. Sometimes the state... in countries where we work, is so fragile and so dysfunctional that the country is more or less operated by NGOs. So sometimes it's, you know, also working to support and capacity build the local state contributes to peace for its inhabitants, for its citizens. But we all know it's contextual, and we need to do our contextual homework. The new Deputy Secretary General, she said in a recent interview that in her own country of Nigeria, she said that UN staff know too little about the local context. They need to improve their sort of context analysis, and they need to improve their conflict analysis. And I think that's sort of one of the keys. And that's something that we at Folke Bernadotte Academy work a lot with, you know, trying to improve that. And you would be pleased to know that even in our training team, we use conflict transformation and systemic analysis. To sum up, the local has a partner, an opposite, of course, which is the global. And you emphasize and you deconstruct the local very well in your report. The international community looms like a menacing shadow in your report, in a way. So one wonders who is that? As you say, who is the local? Where is the local? What is the local? From my perspective, I would be equally interested in a deconstruction of the other in this sense. And also in terms of design, it's like we should design processes. Like, so who should design processes? I guess if you ask, you answered that question in a way from the doing development differently, using stakeholders like that. Joachim, I won't say you're an old timer, but you've been around for a long time. It might please you to hear that when I went to the World Bank's Fragility Forum last time, there was this term used that I haven't heard. It was used all the time in D.C., and I haven't heard it that much since I was a student in the mid-90s, and that was the social contract. So let's see where that discussion takes us, you know, now that we've done the full loop. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for those thoughtful comments and reflections, and also questions I felt coming at towards both you, Joachim, and Hannah, and Martin as the absent author. And also thank you for the poetic language of saying the beauty of bureaucracy and menacing shadow sort of the international community. I thought, could we just hand over perhaps to Joachim and Hannah to respond and reflect on Urban and Chris' comments?
Yeah. I think. When we first suggested this report, we came from a fascination of the fierce critique of peace building. And Jan said something like, well, the international architecture is quite important too. And we said something like, well, yes, but we can't do that now. Okay, but maybe a little. So we did a little, and perhaps a little more than what we first anticipated. But of course, we did not do it for real. Seeing what we see now, it is a fascinating development going on out there in different initiatives, which is kind of from different angles composing a quite substantial trend or movement or some of that sort, which I think is justifying a study in itself, actually. So, yes, absolutely, that shadow should be unpacked or given better attention. I think it's even more important now than it was 1.5 years ago, more obvious. I love the track 6. I mean, that actually basically kind of sums it up. No, but I haven't heard it before, and I kind of like that. Yes, there are also urban new challenges that I think is very, very important. In another context, I've been working on the security development nexus, which is this attempt to connect security and development processes, which is not as easy as it seems. Radicalism, you mentioned. We have another research project which talks about peace building amidst violence. I mean, the civil-military cooperation, which is becoming increasingly important, since it's not anymore that we close a peace agreement and the UN moves in and then the civilians moves in and then it's moving over to development. It's more like it's a kind of ever-ongoing instability which requires a military presence, while at the same time we need to have civilians there to advance the development process. I mean, these are not separate processes anymore, and it's very difficult to deal with. And maybe you've seen the reports coming out on the Norwegian, Danish, and Swedish engagement in Afghanistan, which I think is underlining the difficulties of civil-military cooperation in these fields. The direct question on fundamentals. Well, if I start to refer to the radical critique again, many would say that liberal peace building is perfectly designed for not delivering peace in a real sense. They would argue that national elections as the core of these interventions are perfectly excluding regular people in local arenas by the size of it and the kind of elusiveness of it. We aren't agreeing with this radical critique. I mean, that would be too easy. If I think about fundamentals, I'm not sure if they are fundamentals, but they are certainly being big impediments and important aspects of how this business is pursued and has been for a decade or so, or two perhaps. I mean, the quality systems, the quality control, the monitoring, the very high demands on, should we call it, administrative perfection or strict, very, very strict control of a limited number of project implementation are certainly difficult to combine with the local, which is wild and messy and unpredictable. And it puts probably the individual project managers in risk, I mean, personally or in their job, that they are, if they would try to deal with the messy local, that wouldn't look very good in these very strict quality control systems. Of course, this is not an argument for lowering quality, but it is an argument for that these systems do not necessarily serve a local turn in peace-building very well. Risks, I mean, do no harm has been a overarching policy for basically all donors for decades, which, of course, is a good thing. But then again, dealing with violent conflicts in various phases is unpredictable. And if we are going there, there is no way that we can vaccinate ourselves against risks. There will be cases and phases where we are supporting the wrong side or the wrong processes, because we can't always predict where things are going. So I guess risks need to be accepted as something very real when we talk about peace building. Results-based management, yes, we want results, as if you said. But it's sometimes very difficult to measure processes of peace building, reconciliation, and especially on local level. And I've been involved in many processes where I haven't been an outsider, but I've been involved. There's been difficult processes of reconciliation, and we always kind of asked ourselves that, when this is evaluated, I hope there is a consultant who actually has a broad mind that can actually read what's actually been going on. And then we have told the responsible project manager that that is what's needed for this project, and the project manager says that, I know a few consultants which are really good at this, and the really good consultant comes in and nothing of these deeper reconciliatory or whatever process is going on is ever visible. It's happened to me 3 or 4 times, and I don't know how to get around it, but it's difficult to measure for anyone results in this field. Finally, and I'm not sure this is not an exclusive list, this is just the fundamentals that I come to think on right now, a rights-based approach. That is, of course, a good thing, but it can also be it can land in the wrong way in situations which are very imperfect. How can we use rights-based approach if there are violations and abuse going on in all kinds of directions, and whatever we do, we will end up in one side or the other of that stick. So I'm not sure we can talk about flexibility in terms of rights, but somehow it needs to be related to the actual real situation. And of course sometimes it is, but sometimes it is not. Okay, this is getting lengthy. I'm going to come to sustaining peace is a lovely one. Transformative peace building, I mean, that's absolutely something we would like to see more of. And the social contract, I mean, this is not just nice to hear, it's also very much appealing to myself as a social scientist. I mean, that is, in many ways, the very core of what's going on in post-conflict societies and peace building. So I'd like very much to hear it. Yes.
Yes, I wanted to comment on the internationals, unpacking the internationals. But first of all, I want to say that every time I meet, we have had several meetings with Eva during the process of writing this report, and today I learned so much from the people who are actually involved in doing this. And it's not to say that we are not involved, but we are involved on a different level. Because yes, things are happening. But as an academic, you often rely on those academic papers to come out, which might take a year or two. So I am eagerly waiting for the results of this sustainable goal number 16 of the inclusive societies on all levels. What does that mean? But things are happening. But yes, in terms of the internationals, and I think that especially the critical part of the ones doing critical peace building and driving this local turning peace building in academia are really guilty of not defining the international. In a way, the international has been, like something to punch.
Demonized.
Yeah, been demonized. It's been just the opposition and something to write your critique against. But of course, I mean,
did that too.
Yeah. And as you know, who are very well involved in the policy and the international, know that it's diverse. Of course it is. So we need to get better at that. But also, I think we need to get beyond the toolkits, the easy solutions. All this applies both to the international level as the locals. It is not, the local is messy and complex, but so is the international. So we need to turn that around and look at how those relationships look like.
You have a quick comment,
Chris? Yeah, just a two-finger on that. Yeah, because that's my point, because we talk about the UN, the international community, and I'm like, but that's us. Like, we are the member states of the UN, and the internationals, that's us in a sense. So that's why. But I love the wild and messy. More wild and messy.
More wild and messy. Eva, you'd like to comment as well?
Just on the question about changing fundamentals.
I think the recommendation coming from this report and from the Doing Development Differently agenda on not proposing solutions is quite a fundamental thing. Mm-hmm. And if we apply that to your question about radicalization, I think in a lot of the countries that I've worked in where There is growing radicalization, and we can have a big discussion about what that looks like. What I've observed is that there is growing disillusionment with secular democracy. It has failed to deliver on development promises in a lot of these countries. And so, so in our toolkit, we do have ideas based on liberal democratic ideals. And if we have to let them go, that's that's quite huge.
I'm slightly reminded of Groucho Marx saying that these are my principles. If you don't like them, I have others. In that sense, but that's stretching it, but requiring that you are adaptive and flexible. But then also a question of for how long. I thought it was really interesting in the report when you mentioned gender equality and how that differs between the different cases, and how in a very or more organic process like Somaliland had a adverse effect on gender representation and equality. So reinforcing that through the Goethe system in Somaliland, whereas in others where it was less perhaps organic, more pushed or connected with international NGOs, you had more of these values represented through the process as well. So that's also an important thing, I think, to bring to mind in terms of risks, and also to ask risk for whom in that sense.